Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX Ask the Experts presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey, so we can do something besides leave your clients just alone. We're listening to 560thesource.com, also heard on 100.7 FM. Looks like there's a 95.3 FM, a 1220 KDLC AM. There's an online at 560thesource.com. And I also hear that there is a TuneIn app where you can go and do things like that. So that's kind of exciting, you know, see what we can do and see what we can figure out and all that good stuff. But it's kind of a, you know, it's a nice thing to be able to listen and hear, you know, things all over the place. So last week I talked about the emotional impact of someone who passes away and death and dying and all those type of things. And, you know, we talked about how you know, there's not really a good way to plan for the emotional impact, but we need to at least know that it's there so that when it is there, we can be ready for it. And also having an estate plan can help you be in a position where you can deal with the emotional impact and then, you know, deal with the dollars and the cents and all that kind of stuff. And I think I talked a little bit about my client who had his mother die not too long ago. And so his mother passed away, and he's in the midst of dealing with all of the things that you have to deal with when somebody passes away. And he has a sibling. He talked to his brother, and his brother, they had talked about how they wanted, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, we'll wait until after the funeral to worry about probating the estate and all that kind of stuff. So it was interesting when suddenly we had a person who, then suddenly my client had this person who called, and he's like, oh, well, I'm the attorney for your brother and for the estate, and you know, we're going to file for probate tomorrow, and we have this will, and so on and so forth. And my client's like, whoa, hold on just a minute. What in the world do you mean that there's a probate estate? And what do you mean that there's suddenly going to be, you know, we have a will that was written just 6 months ago. The guy's like, oh, I have one that was done in 2011. It's completely correct as far as I'm concerned, so we're going to move forward with that one. Okay, well, all right, now we need to stop. We need to back up and say, okay, hold on. Not that we're going to have a fight about whose will is better than another's, because mine is, or the one that I wrote is more recent. So, you know, that's going to win the fight. But you suddenly have a whole question of, well, which one's the correct one? Which one's the one that we should pay attention to? And, you know, I have clients all the time who ask me, well, you know, do I need to tell the other attorney about this? I'm like, only if you think it's going to be an issue, or only if you think that somehow there's going to be a problem with it, and so you are not sure that, or you think that, you know, it could become a problem. Because what you do is you submit the wills to probate, and then, you know, the one that's the most recent and that's done properly will be the one that controls. Well, apparently, this is not really what the brother wanted to hear. So, you know, they're in the midst of, apparently, they're going to have to fight it out. Then I look at it and think to myself, okay, well, go ahead, fight it out. Sounds good. I hope it turns out okay for you. Yeah, I hope you know, you'd kind of hope that you didn't have to fight it out. But hey, what do I know, right? I'm just the guy who's, you know, was involved in writing stuff. And so we've been going back and forth, and we're trying to get things worked out. We're trying to get things figured out. You know, it as soon as it became something that was, I mean, I had been kind of helping this client just, you know, I helped him fill out the paperwork so that we could fill it out and get, you know, going on probate. But when there was going to be a fight, I'm like, you know what, you probably want somebody who's going to handle probate litigation. So I referred him to my friend that does probate litigation because I thought that that would be better than me trying to figure out all this stuff. And, you know, I have friends who do probate litigation. I have friends who handle probate administration, you know, that could turn into litigation, because if I just start representing somebody in an administrative capacity and suddenly it turns to litigation, I'm still on the hook. I still have to be the one that will handle things. You know, I suppose I could withdraw or be replaced, but just because of that type of thing, I'm like, yeah, I don't know that I really want to. And the person that I referred my client to handle the probate litigation, she's a good friend of mine, and we were out at lunch the other day, and we have a group of solo estate planning practitioners who get together and, you know, kind of support each other, and, you know, not that we talk about, you know, private client things, but, you know, we also don't think that we necessarily know absolutely everything, so we try to help each other out so that it's not a, oh, hey, you're completely on your own and have to figure everything out on your own. Yeah, good luck. But what we do is I was talking to her, and I was like, yeah, you know, I don't particularly love doing probate administration. She's like, yeah, actually, I kind of enjoy it. I've done it for a while, and, you know, I kind of enjoy doing it. I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. And, you know, so I ended up referring it to her. And I said, you know, I don't like it when they go bad and they go south and then it's horrible and it's terrible and everybody gets upset at everybody. And she's like, I don't know that that happens in all of them. She's like, it happens more often than you might think. So I was like, huh, that's interesting. That's good to know. And I guess I'll, you know, believe that and understand that from my friend who does it all the time. But it was an interesting thing for me that she would talk about that and how it didn't necessarily always work out the way that, there were complications, and complications were fairly common. I'm like, huh, I just guess I just didn't necessarily understand that for whatever reason. And so, you know, I was willing to help her, I was willing to talk to her about it, but it was an interesting time in talking with her, just because I once had an attorney who I was working with, and, you know, we both did estate planning, and, you know, we were in a meeting, and he's like, well, why wouldn't you want to do a probate case? This would be great, and this would be so on and so forth. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really like the litigation. I don't like the conflict. I don't like the fight. I don't like, you know, it's just not my thing. So, you know, I don't necessarily do it. And this person was dumbfounded that, you know, I would make a statement like that. And I think it was because they did enjoy it. And since they did enjoy it, that's what they wanted to do. You know, for me, I'm like, hey, this is what I enjoy. I enjoy the planning part. I enjoy the getting things taken care of part. I don't necessarily enjoy the, we're going to fight it out. And what does this mean? And, you know, who's, you know, what's the proper valuation? And what's the time frame? And, you know, what if, you know, who's going to win if so? I mean, I always find that funny when people are like, oh, well, you know, well, what are the odds of this? And I'm like, I'm not going to quote you odds. I think you will win. I think that we did everything right, and I think that because, well, we did, and it's all laid out in black and white here. But, you know, people get very, very unsure and very upset, and they want to have, like, certainty about, oh, well, what's going to happen in the future, as if somehow, you know, I have no crystal ball, I'm not a soothsayer, I can't predict the future for you. And, you know, that kind of happens. So, yeah, I can plan your estate, and, you know, we have to understand that sometimes things can change. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. And our phone number to talk to us in studio is 303-477-5600. please feel free to call if you have a question or just you want, something you want to discuss. But, you know, things change all the time. You know, there's not always a lot of, you know, there's not always a lot of changes, and there's not always a lot of questions about, or, you know, there's not always, you know, it's not like, oh, this has changed and this has changed, and so we need to do this and this and the next Y and Z and so on and so forth. But sometimes, you know, there are changes, and sometimes there's major changes. Today, as a matter of fact, we got tax law change. So, you know, we've, you know, whether you completely support or oppose the tax bill that was passed today, it significantly changed the tax rules. Specifically in the estate planning area, it increased the estate tax limit from $5.49 million to $10.98 million per person. So now, in order for a person to have a taxable estate, they have to have right around $11 million or more. Or if you have a couple, you have to have right around $20 million or more. Well, the question is that good, bad, or otherwise? And the answer is, why, yes. Yes, it is. You know, there's no such thing as, I mean, it's hard to say good, bad, or otherwise. You know, it just is, and there's different things that happen, and there's different ways that we look at how things are set up. But what it does is, you know, I don't play a lot in the estate tax planning arena. You know, most of my clients don't have anywhere near $5.5 million, much less nearly $11 million apiece. You know, if you've got $11 million plus, good for you. If you get $22 million plus, good for you. I don't think there's a lot of people in that boat, myself included. You know, I suppose if you took, I don't have anywhere near $11 million. I guess it depends on how close we are. You know, I'm closer to 11 million than 11 million is to a billion, you know, if that makes sense. But, you know, I'm certainly not rich. I'm kind of in the middle of the pack like most of us are. So how does the estate tax change affect you? Most likely it doesn't. You know, how could it affect you? You know, if you've got over that estate tax limit, then there's planning options that are available. And of course, you know, we got a major change to the estate tax. You know, that was part of the tax cut bill today. And you say, okay, well, cool. All right, well, that's there. You know, so, well, that's good. We've got those rules to play under. Well, except that those are different rules than we got just a few years ago. You know, a few years back in 2010, we had an uncapped year where there was no estate tax. And then 2011, 2012, we got a $5 million estate tax limit. And then that estate tax limit lapsed for like a couple of days in 2013, and then it was extended and made permanent. And I've always said, well, it's permanent, which means until Congress changes their mind. And Congress apparently changed their mind today and said, nope, we're going to make that much bigger. Okay, good to know. Well, the party that is currently in power probably won't stay there for the rest of eternity. You know, right now, Republicans have control of the House, they have control of the Senate, and they have control of the White House. Okay. You know, Democrats don't have a majority in any of the legislative branches of the United States government at this point. But I hear there's an election coming up next year in 2018. And after that, there's another one in 2020, which will include a presidential election. And it is very possible, I'm not even going to begin to ask how probable it is, because I'm not a political analyst and I certainly don't know, but we have questions about how, you know, what happens if we get a switch in which party's in control? Would we get a repeal of the estate tax change? Now, with Donald Trump still being president, it's probably not super likely that he would approve changing the estate tax rules to something other than what they currently are or how they're going to be for the next couple of years. So it might be the type of thing, just because he has veto power, and if this is one of his signature legislative items, then he's probably going to want to protect it. But, you know, whether Donald Trump and, you know, he may or may not win re-election in 2020, There may be another Republican who wins election in 2020. There may be a Democrat who wins election in 2020. We could have the dream of some of my friends who are like, we need a third party candidate. Okay, sounds good. Yeah, if you can put forth a viable one, I'll talk to you about it. But we don't know who it's going to be. We don't know who's going to be in power. We don't know who's going to be able to do these things. So because of those, because we don't know, you know, we can't predict the future all the way. We can't predict the future and how things are going to go. We can't predict the future of what's it going to look like. We can't predict who's going to, you know, what the rules will be in the future. So a lot of times what we do is we set up rule, we set up estate plans now under the current rules. And then if the rules change, we can adjust things in the future. Back when we had an uncapped year, we were thinking that we were going to go from a $5 million estate tax limit back to a $1 million estate tax limit. There's a lot of planning that went on. It was like, okay, well, we're going to make this gift here. We're going to change this here. And then 2013 showed up and suddenly, oh, wait, we finished off what we'd done. And we no longer had questions about what the, the rules went back to what we thought they were going to be, and we weren't sure what we were going to do. So suddenly we had, all right, well, we've got the questions, we've got the concerns, and people had done all sorts of things where they'd used gifting strategies to give things away. And they're like, and suddenly in 2013, they're like, well, wait a minute. We did all of that in anticipation of a $1 million limit. Now we've still got a $5 million limit plus. Can we undo what we did? Because we don't necessarily need to do it. So it just changes things around. It's just a big, you know, crazy question things about, you know, it was a chaotic time because we didn't necessarily have a continuous set of rules. And that happens a lot. In 2013, the Colorado State Legislature changed the living will rules. And the living will is, of course, the do we pull the plug or not document. And, you know, how are we going to, you know, what are we going to do? And what happens if we, you know, if you're on life support and, you know, do you want to be, because before 2013, it was just if you're in a terminal condition. Well, in 2013, the state legislature added language that addressed what would happen if you were in a persistent vegetative state instead of just in a terminal condition. You know, this, you know, does it seem like a big change? No. Is it going to affect a whole lot of people? Probably not. Is it an important change from a legal standpoint? Why, yes. Now, I always jokingly say, well, gee, if you're in a terminal condition, then apparently you'll die quickly. But a persistent vegetative state, apparently you'll die slowly, you know, or something like that. But, you know, you're, either way, you're on life support, and we're not sure if you're going to be, you know, what's going to happen. So, you know, the rules changed in 2013. So, you know, did we have to go and change every single document that I had ever written prior to 2013? No. Because the old ones were grandfathered in. The old ones, you know, still work. But if we were going to update things, if we're going to, you know, somebody comes in, and my last client that I met with today, they had documents for me to update. So I'm like, all right. So I, you know, went through them. They're like, well, when were yours done? Well, they were done in 2008, but, you know, we already have living wills. I'm like, yeah, rules changed 5 years after that and 4 years ago now. So we probably want to update those and make a change. They're like, huh, yeah, I guess if we're doing everything else, we might as well do that. Yep, sounds good. And here we are. So, you know, things change all the time in the estate planning arena. And, you know, we have to be ready for and account for those. You know, estate planning is not quite the old Ronco, the old Ronco commercial where you could set it and forget it. Well, once you set an estate plan in place, you don't have to worry about it all the time, but it's nice to have it updated every once in a while. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. And my phone number is 303-477-5600. And, of course, my direct line is 720-394-6887. That's the line that you can call If you have a question about your own personal stuff or you'd like to make an appointment to talk about your information or what you want to do, you know, those are possibilities. So then, you know, even more important than how the laws change is that your life circumstances change. I got an email from somebody this morning. They wanted a rough estimate to redo their estate planning documents. So, well, our current documents were done in the 90s, and when our kids were young, and we'd like to do things that would be different because they have adult children now, and, you know, their worries are different. Well, that makes sense. You know, they probably still want to leave things to their kids, but they probably don't need to. If their kids were young in the 90s, and now it's 2017, the kids are probably adults, probably don't have to worry too much about how do we set up an estate plan so that, you know, we protect the kids from taking too much money and, you know, squandering it when they're young, because we have the kids are not going to be young, and the kids are no longer young, and the kids are no longer squandering, or they still have the opportunity to squander. But if they're not minors, then there's probably a lot less ability to squander that money because they have more maturity. And so we've got some different, you know, they have their different goals and objectives, different things they want to do. I was talking with a different client today who we're going to set up an estate plan for them. And because we set up an estate plan for them, you know, we talked about different types of trusts. And the person who I was talking to, we were talking about a revocable trust. And then we talked about an irrevocable trust for when they get older, if they want to protect money for Medicaid. She said, oh, well, what's the right age to do that? I said, well, yeah, there's no one right age. There's no one right time to do it. It's just when you feel comfortable. I had a client who, actually a listener to this show, who came to me and said, well, you know, I set up my revocable trust 4.5 years ago, so I'm almost done with the 5-year look-back period, so I just wanted to know about this. And I said, okay, did you say revocable? She's like, well, yeah, why? I said, because if you have a revocable trust, you have not started any sort of look-back period for Medicaid. And she's like, really? Why? Like, because you can revoke or amend or undo the trust at any time. And if that's the case, then, you know, you still have access to those funds. They need to be, you know, they need to be separated from you for you to be able to get the protection. And she was kind of floored by that. She had no idea that that was the case. And I said, well, you know, here's what we can do. And I talked about how we could set up an estate plan and an irrevocable trust to protect her assets from Medicaid should she get sick. You know, she's only 69 years old. So she's got, you know, plenty of life left to live, and she's not sick now. But it's a good idea to start planning ahead, or so she thinks. You know, that's important to her. So I said, okay, well, we can do that. So we, even just this morning, actually, we signed the trust to set up the protections. And, you know, that's fine, and that's what she wanted to do. Now, sometimes I get calls from people who are, you know, they work at rehabilitation companies, or they work at different... you know, they work different places, and they'll refer people to me and be like, oh, well, you know, you need to call Michael if mom's going into, if you've got your mom or dad going into assisted living or the nursing home, then suddenly you need to go ahead and you need to figure out, all of this, and you need to make sure that you've got everything planned out and everything has to be set up, and you can just put everything into a trust and then you'll qualify for Medicaid. I'm like, okay, hold on just a minute. So the person told you that if you just put everything into a trust, you can qualify for Medicaid immediately. Well, yeah. Okay, well, and I'm like, okay, we need to stop and we need to back up, because Medicaid will have a 5-year look back period. If you put assets into a Medicaid, into a trust, if you put it into a trust where you're trying to just get it out of somebody's name, you have to do that more than 5 years before you apply for Medicaid. Or if you go to put something into a trust, you can put it into a trust, but then the primary beneficiary of the trust is you know, needs to be Medicaid so that they can recover the assets later on. So that doesn't provide a whole lot of asset protection. And a lot of people are just floored by this. They're like, well, wait a minute. We thought that there was a way to put it in there. I'm like, yeah, well, sometimes as an attorney, I try to, train people who are referring to me of how to not say things that are untrue. But sometimes that's just how life goes. And sometimes that's just how things happen. And so, when I plan with people for Medicaid, I end up doing a lot of kind of pre-planning stuff and say, okay, we'll plan ahead. And if you're going to need these assets to live off of, we probably don't want to put them in here. And we kind of figure out what's the acceptable level of risk that we're willing to take. How much money do we need to live off of between now and then? And maybe you have a paid off house. So we deal with the paid off house and protect the paid off house instead of saying, we say, okay, well, we've got a paid off house. That's good. But since we have a paid off house, we don't necessarily need to, we don't want to just dump all of, and people who have like an IRA or a 401k, we don't want to get hit with current tax on trying to put that into a trust. So maybe we can't protect absolutely everything. We do the best we can. And we do that based on your life, your circumstances, what the current laws are, and how we can make them work for you instead of against you. So thanks so much for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. I will be back next week, but coming up next is John Rush and Rush to Reason. You got John Rush, Dan Muir. So stay tuned for them, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, and have a great day. Bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.